Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up later this hour, we will replay part of an interview that I did on this program with John Updike a few years ago. Of course, he passed away yesterday, and very interesting stuff having to do with terrorism, among other things, from John Updike in that piece. He had written a novel called Terrorist at the time, which was 2004, so that's coming up in a little bit. Also this hour, we will talk about the stimulus bill and higher education. We will look specifically at higher education aspects of the stimulus bill, and we're inviting you to continue posting to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show with your favorite and least favorite elements of the stimulus bill as you're learning the details. Here's one that just came in from Marco. It says, I'm an opera singer based in New York City. My favorite part of the stimulus package is the funds allocated to the National Endowment for the Arts. It's only $50 million, if I'm not mistaken, but art companies are in deep trouble all over the country. And he adds, his least favorite part is the tax cuts. What are your favorite and least favorite parts of the stimulus bill? Go to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll keep reading them through the hour and talk in detail about the stimulus and higher ed later this hour. Frances Townsend is with us now. She was President Bush's top advisor for Homeland Security and counterterrorism. She also worked in the Clinton Justice Department, a person who straddled both administrations in high positions, rare in that respect. She is supporting President Obama's choice for Attorney General Eric Holder, who's likely to be confirmed today. And she'll be speaking in New York tonight as part of a panel on WMDs at NYU, 245 Sullivan Street, if you're interested, for free at 6:30 this evening. She's from around here, by the way, Wantagh girl originally. So, Ms. Townsend, thanks so much for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be home.
I guess not so many people remind you of your Wantagh roots. Huh?
I often get the Montauk, and I say, no, Wantagh.
We know Wantagh in the southern state. All right, President Bush left office very unpopular, but his supporters say the first thing to remember is that there were no more attacks in the United States for the whole 8 years after 9/11. How much do you claim credit that government policy was responsible for that?
You know, Brian, my first response when people say this is, I get that there was controversy about the policies, the tactics that were used, but there's no controversy about the result, the no attacks. I would say to you that it's not just... Before we decide whether or not we want to give credit to the Bush administration policies, the absolute credit undeniably goes to the tens of thousands of men and women around the world in uniform, in the CIA, in the FBI, in the Department of Homeland Security. What happened was we during the course of the Bush administration made tremendous investments financially in these departments and built capability that didn't exist when I was in the Clinton administration. And so we've left the country with more capability and stronger, and therefore lessened the likelihood of an attack here on the homeland. And we've also managed to weaken Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups around the world. So we are in a better place than we were before because of this capability. But rather than get into the political debate about does the last administration deserve credit, I really think the credit goes to the people who are on the front lines doing the job.
One or two particular things, either at the policy level or the execution level, if you're going to shout out to the people on the front lines, one or two particular things, maybe things that, you know, a lot of people haven't debated or heard about before?
Well, I mean, I think that on the overseas part, the two things that I would mention to you, our military has really transformed themselves to be able to fight an unconventional enemy. Think of General Petraeus and what he's done in Iraq, and he's got special operations units who work for him and report to him. I mean, there are heroes in our military who have, you know, retooled their capability to fight what we call an asymmetric threat, which is extraordinary. The other capability that I think people really underestimate is the capability that we have in the CIA. I mean, I think they've come under much criticism for failure of the analysis in Iraq because of the enhanced interrogation techniques program. But what you don't hear about, of course, it's very much Washington, is the success part of they've increased tremendously the number of people they have gathering human intelligence. And it's only by penetrating and penetrating organizations and learning about the intentions of states and non-state actors that we can really work to prevent an attack. For example, this is how we learn things about Iran's nuclear weapons program or North Korea or Russian intentions in the Baltic states. It's also how we learn economic espionage priorities of allies and non-allies around the world, in addition to all the counterterrorism capability. And so really, the men and women of the CIA have done extraordinary work. Then here at home, I mean, I think we hear a lot of criticism about the Department of Homeland Security, but look at the job they're doing along the southwest border. There's been some controversy about the border enforcement piece versus internal enforcement against businesses who hire illegals, and I think we're going to see a shift in that. But those men and women do a very difficult job under very dangerous circumstances and have really been a credit to the country.
Frances Townsend, my guest on WNYC, who is President Bush's chief Homeland Security advisor. I read that you're supporting President Obama's Attorney General nominee, Eric Holder, who could be confirmed today, despite disagreeing with him on some issues. Do you know Eric Holder well?
I do. I worked for him. We had the opportunity to work together both when he was a U.S. attorney in Washington, D.C., and when he was deputy attorney general. Our children, when they were young, went to the same elementary school together. We live in the same neighborhood. Look, I disagree with the pardons, the Mark Rich pardon in particular, and the Puerto Rican terrorist group, FALN member pardons, commutations, excuse me. But look, we're all human. We all make mistakes. Eric has acknowledged that those pardons, certainly the Rich pardon, was a mistake. And I think he'll be an extraordinary attorney general. He was a career prosecutor. He understands how the Justice Department works. He understands how to ensure that the career lawyers, along with the political appointees, have input, that they're heard, that they're respected. He certainly understands and respects the integrity and mission of the department, and I think he'll make an extraordinarily fine attorney general.
Why do you think, what would be your top piece of advice for him with respect to Homeland Security, which to some degree is an attorney general function? The FBI is under attorney general, and et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I do think, look, we've seen a number of missteps with the FBI. They're doing great work, but, you know, you think about things like the national security letters where they weren't used properly. I mean, I think the first order of business for the next attorney general will be to look at the authorities, the legal authorities that are given to not only Justice Department components like the FBI, but legal opinions related to the activities of CIA. He's got responsibility for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. He's got responsibility for the enforcement of the Patriot Act. I mean, I think the first order of business is to look at all of those legal authorities and how they are currently implemented and executed and make judgments about, does he think that's right, or does there need to be additional guidance, if you will? Do there need to be additional protections in place? And I expect that there's a very strong transition team from the Obama administration in there, and I expect that they're preparing all that right now for when Eric Holder gets confirmed.
As you know, in his confirmation hearing, Mr. Holder explicitly called waterboarding torture, which some people say could lead to prosecution of Bush administration officials, since it would be the legal position of the United States Attorney General. Are you now more concerned about such prosecutions?
Well, first, I think, and I don't know whether or not Eric Holder has read it. I mean, there are legal opinions that say waterboarding is not torture. I understand that's the crux of the debate. I think, first and foremost, you've got to go back and look at all the legal work that's been done in order to really make that legal judgment. I viewed what he said as a policy judgment, and he's entitled to make a policy judgment as well.
What's the difference between a legal judgment and a policy judgment when the U.S. Attorney General calls something torture?
Well, the Attorney General sits as part of the National Security Council, and in that role, the Attorney General has the ability to say, is something legal or not? He is the only voice on that. But when policy decisions get made, everyone who sits as a part of the National Security Council gets to speak as to what the policy ought to be. When I think about this issue, my view of the analysis is, first you have to say, is it legal? If the answer to that question is yes, then you have to ask yourself, is it effective? If the answer to that, and that's really a question for the intelligence community, but if it's yes to both of those, then you have to say to yourself, now, would it be good policy? And it may be that you get yes to the first, yes to the second, and you say no. Or you say, no, not without additional safeguards and protections. I don't believe, and it's only been 9 days, to be fair, that sort of analysis has been done as relates to waterboarding. And if it has, I think then the new Attorney General needs to speak publicly about it. Now, on the question you asked, the specific question about prosecutions, I don't believe that the new administration will do that, nor do I believe they should. The individuals who implemented the program acted in the belief that it was legal based on Justice Department, Office of Legal Counsel, Justice Department legal opinions. They were entitled to rely on them. And when you look at how the program was executed in terms of doctors and psychologists and training and review process, I mean, I think it would anybody who knew the details of that program would view it as grossly unfair to even consider prosecuting anyone who was involved in the program.
A couple of people on our webpage are posting questions that kind of amount to whether our response to 9/11 has been over the top in a number of ways. One listener quotes Thomas Schelling, the Nobel laureate in economics, who told the Wall Street Journal that with the exception of the World Trade Towers, terrorism is almost a minuscule problem, and says, in addition, the 3,000 people who died in the trade towers, horrible as that was, of course, is 3.5 weeks of automobile fatalities. So the conclusion is terrorism is a problem, but where do we stop spending money and restricting freedoms? What do you say to those listeners?
Well, I think that we do make judgments about where is our next dollar best spent. And I'll give you an example, which actually I think belies what that comment. We have a requirement now in 2012 to 100% cargo screening coming into this country. You know, with just-in-time delivery in the supply chain and the economics of it, we're incapable of doing it. If we had to implement that law as a country, we would crush our economy. You would stop things in the supply chain. And what's the threat? Why would we spend our next dollar to do that? Well, the supposition is that the threat is if Al-Qaeda got a nuclear weapon, they would put it into the supply chain, and that's how they'd get it into the country. I don't believe that. I don't think that is the threat. I don't think if Al-Qaeda got their most strategically valuable weapon that they have been after for over a decade, they'd release it into the supply chain and relinquish control of it. So here's something. Could we do it? Yeah. Could we spend a bunch of money on it? Yeah. But is the threat, does it warrant it? No. I use that as an example because I do think, to your point, we do have to look at what is the threat, what are the potential consequences, and where is our, in a difficult economic times, where is our next dollar best spent?
Frances Townsend, President Bush's Chief Homeland Security Advisor, my guest on WNYC. She's in town for a conference tonight on the future of WMDs and the risk to that to the United States at NYU. And there's a new report about ongoing risks in that respect that is just out. Do you want to tell our listeners what you think is important in that new report?
Sure. The report really focuses on two forms of WMD, nuclear and biological, and it makes the case that while the threat is greater as to both, the occurrence of the use of both in this country by terrorists, they worry a lot about the biological threat. They worry more in the report about the biological threat. I think they're correct. I do think a good deal has been done. There are a number of programs like the Proliferation Security Initiative, the Global Initiative to Combat Nuclear Terrorism. And so there are a bunch of building blocks that have been laid to combat these problems, but more needs to be done, particularly when you look at the biological threat. We need more scientific expertise in our intelligence community. Intelligence is the greatest weapon in terms of prevention of an attack. We need greater international sharing of information on biological stockpiles, which we don't have. You know, there is the Biological Weapons Convention, but there isn't a sharing, a transparency, if you will, in the international community that needs to be there. And so the report rightly makes a whole series of recommendations, and from the look of it, a number of the – this is a bipartisan panel appointed by Congress, and many of the Democrats on this – who sat on this panel appear to be going back into government. So I'm hopeful that we'll see these recommendations implemented.
You like Eric Holder's appointment, by the way. What about Janet Napolitano, the governor of Arizona, to head up Homeland Security? What about Leon Panetta to head up CIA? These are people who critics say don't have enough experience in the particular areas.
I think they're wrong when it comes to Napolitano. I worked with her, as you mentioned, when I was at the Clinton Justice Department. She was the United States Attorney in Arizona. I have also worked with her since she's been the governor of Arizona on border enforcement down in Arizona. She's terrific. I mean, she's very experienced. She gets law enforcement. She gets border security. It's a very large, you know, the Department of Homeland Security is a very large organization. She's got a good team around her. I think she'll be superb. I don't think there's a better qualified governor in the country to have walked into that department. With Mr. Panetta, I know I have worked with and sat with Leon on boards. I think the world of him. I think he's a good manager. He's certainly a seasoned political operative. I don't think he was the right pick for CIA. And only because he's a smart man. Can he learn it? Yes. I just don't think where you've heard me say now, intelligence is the greatest weapon to prevent the next attack. This is not a man with deep experience in the intelligence community. And while I think he can learn it, I don't think this is a job where we want somebody learning on the job.
Mm. How would you assess the strength of Al-Qaeda right now?
Well, Al-Qaeda has sort of, it's funny, as we've been effective against capturing or killing its leaders, it has transformed itself. It's morphed itself, if you will, by creating a broader international network. We've seen mergers, for example, with a Sunni extremist group in North Africa known as the GSPC, the Group for Combat Preaching and Combat. They merged with Al-Qaeda. We've seen the Libyan Sunni extremist group merge with Al-Qaeda. And so they've extended their reach by these affiliations. We've had a good deal of success against the central sort of operational leadership, obviously with the exception of bin Laden and Zawahiri, who I'm presuming the government continues to target. We saw this week there were additional predator strikes in the tribal areas, and so obviously the Obama administration is continuing to target them. But they're going to find, as the Bush administration did, that's a very difficult task.
President Obama made his first foreign phone call after being inaugurated to Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, and he did his first sit-down TV interview with Al Arabiya. Good idea? Important in the fight on terrorism in any way?
Very important. I think particularly Al Arabiya and the call to Mahmoud Abbas. Al Arabiya is a Saudi-based TV station, very influential in the Arab world. I think those things are very important in terms of setting the tone of what the Obama administration's priorities are. That said, I think we've got to be careful in terms of raising expectations of the American people. We don't get attacked because people don't like us. And consequently, we're not going to become safer because more people in the Arab world do like us. Al-Qaeda's got their own agenda. They're determined to hate us, to kill us. They abhor the freedoms that we cherish. And so while I think there's a lot of good reasons to use what I call smart power, and I think that's what you're seeing with this call to Mahmoud Abbas and the interview on Al Arabiya, I think we've got to measure our expectations of what that will produce. Countries and groups act in their own self-interest. They don't act in a certain way whether or not they like us.
Last thing, again from our webpage, somebody writes, you were interviewed on CNN and asked by Ed Henry if not getting bin Laden was a failure. Your response, it wasn't a failure. It's a success that hasn't happened yet. You said that.
Yes, I did say that.
What does that mean?
Well, I've taken much grief for it. What my point was is I have ultimate confidence, particularly in the CIA and our military forces who are responsible for the fight, for the hunt for bin Laden, that in the long term, that will happen, that we will either capture or kill bin Laden and Zawahiri. But it takes time. I think ultimately this is a country with a very long memory and tremendous tenacity and determination, and I think ultimately that will prevail in this fight, that we will capture or kill bin Laden and Zawahiri, but it's going to take time.
Frances Townsend was the chief Homeland Security advisor to President Bush, also a high official in the Clinton Justice Department. She'll be on a panel about the future of WMDs tonight at NYU with former Senator Bob Graham, former Senator Jim Talent, also Robin Cleveland, another expert on this, and Stephen Rademacher. Interesting panel that will be for free if you want to go, and open to the public at 6:30 tonight at the NYU building at 245 Sullivan Street. Thank you so much for coming on with us. I hope we can talk again.
Brian, thank you very much. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And did you know that we once talked to John Updike about terrorism? We will re-air that interview excerpt in a minute.